Okay, apparently we're just getting her right now.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, we're going to just set up here. This is a little bit different here, but Nicole Thomas Kennedy, are you joining us right now?
I am, and I'm so sorry I was late. I was stuck in another meeting.
Oh,
my apologies.
Okay, I'm glad that we get you because we had some questions for you. So we want to just introduce you to our listeners. You are a former public defender. You are now in private practice, and you have described yourself as an abolitionist of policing and the criminal justice system, and we appreciate you joining us on the show. So I just want to start off. As Seattle City Attorney, you would be in charge of criminal prosecution of misdemeanors and civil litigation on behalf of the city. But you have already stated that you would not prosecute most misdemeanors. Explain to us, how would that be a benefit to the city, and how would that help improve our safety?
Sure. So right now, the reality is that a lot of the misdemeanors that are currently being charged are crimes of poverty and disability. And there is nothing about prosecuting crimes of poverty or disability that change the underlying conditions of poverty or disability. So I would like to actually address the root causes of crimes so that way we can deter crimes in the future. So a lot of the things that come through Seattle Muni are things like I've had lots of cases of stealing a sandwich, a block of cheese and a beer, sleeping under an awning. And there's really nothing about putting someone in jail for a temporary amount of time, because that's all that's allowed for misdemeanors is a temporary jail stay. There's nothing about those situations that make it less likely from happening again. So I would like to spend more money on scaling up resources for people, whether around mental health, around addiction, and around poverty, that are going to allow them to be self-reliant and flourish instead of continuing to destabilize people through expensive prosecution. And one of the ways that we can do that is by spending less money on prosecution. Prosecution costs, you know, for around $10,000 for each prosecution. And how is that actually in the interest of public safety when we are spending that amount of money prosecuting someone for sleeping under an awning instead of spending that money on housing? Then that's, we are the only country in the world that incarcerates the way that we do, and we are far from the safest. And so I would like to take us in a new direction where we're actually addressing root problems instead of continuing to cycle through punishment. And also, there's lots of options between not prosecuting and prosecuting all the time. You know, there's diversionary programs, there's community-based mentorship programs, there's family violence programs. A lot of these things are currently being resourced. We need to scale up on those things because those are the things that are going to result in true public safety.
But you have already stated, even before sight unseen any of these cases, you have already stated that your intent is not to prosecute. And so you mentioned crimes of poverty, but in some cases, we're talking about shoplifting, drunk driving, low-level assaults. And I think that people would argue that without any sort of consequence and not holding people accountable, those things will continue to happen. And those things do have an impact on others and don't make us feel safe. And I'm speaking as someone who lives in the city of Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I totally agree with you. So, and it's not sight unseen. I've actually worked in this system. And what I have said multiple times is that for some cases, especially interpersonal violence and repeat DUIs, traditional prosecution has to remain an option. But there's a huge amount of area in between not doing anything and prosecuting to the fullest extent of the law. So while prosecution has to remain an option in some cases, there are other ways of dealing with these situations. There's other ways of fostering accountability. There's other ways of addressing these problems where jail has shown to be a failure. And I think one of the biggest indications of this is when people talk about prolific offenders. Yes, there are people who continually cycle in and out of jail for misdemeanors, and it is a problem. But the issue, but I want to solve the problem. I don't want to just keep perpetuating the problem, because we are talking about misdemeanors. The maximum sentence is less than a year. We have to do, if we want true public safety, we need to do something different, and we need to be resourcing different things, because right now we are wasting money on this. Even if we wanted to keep someone in jail for an entire year, it would cost $73,000. Whereas permanent supportive housing with wraparound case management services costs about $23,000.
Last year,
we really need. What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
No. Please. I'm a lawyer.
You are a lawyer. And before you were a candidate for Seattle City Attorney last year, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've talked about this. I want to talk about these tweets. Pigs. Mm-hmm. Nazis, losers, stains on humanity is some mm-hmm. of the things that you describe, were able to describe the Seattle Police Department or police in general. Why did you tweet that?
So that was in 2020. And so the reality of what was happening right at that time was huge, massive protests all across the country against racist police killings. And the response by police in Seattle was to become even more brutal than they had ever been before. So my neighborhood was gassed 11 times in a row. I had to buy a gas mask for my 9-year-old daughter. SPD repeatedly lied about why they did it. They said an umbrella was a riot and a candle was a bomb. I mean, there was a lot of things that were going on at that time, and I was angry. And so I definitely trolled police at that time on Twitter. I didn't cause any property damage. I didn't hurt a cop. I didn't do anything like that. But I definitely spoke back to power on Twitter. And I was not a candidate for office at that time. I was a private citizen. I defend the right of every private citizen to troll whoever they want on Twitter. Would I tweet like that as a candidate for office? No, I wouldn't.
I've never been a candidate for office. I'm a black mm-hmm. man in America, right? And there, mm-hmm. in 2020, on my show, no doubt about it, there's a lot of things that happened in 2020 that I want and still to this day want police officers held accountable for. There has been a problem of a lot of police officers not being held accountable for their actions. However, I've never done that on Twitter because I know that even though I personally you didn't do anything to someone, someone else can read your tweets and do something and be empowered because of that. Do you understand that because of what you did, that someone else can see that and say, and get charged up to be upset and do something towards police officers? Do you understand that?
I mean, it's not like I was the president of the United States of America. I was a private citizen, and
neither
a lot
am
of those
I.
tweets have like, one, maybe, like, I think the most has 6 likes. I was really not, I mean, I didn't think anybody took me that seriously.
Well, I can tell you that the police officers and people who live in the community to take it seriously, because you look at it and you say, is this what is in her heart? And a year after those tweets are put out, you are now running for an office where you would be in a position of deciding whether or not to file charges based on what the police put forward. And mm-hmm. You would also be in charge of potentially representing police if there's some civil litigation. So how, if mm-hmm. I am a police officer, how am I going to feel like you would have my back in some of those situations, or that as a community member, that you would actually take anything brought forward to you from police seriously?
Because I'm a professional. I'm a professional lawyer. I've done over 600 cases, and I've never lost a trial. I was a public defender, which means I don't get to choose the cases I have. I defend the people that are brought to me. I defend my clients, and I always have. And so whether my client is the city or whether my client is the residents of the city, that is what the job is. And I have shown that I can do that job very well. So whether, you know, I'm open about the fact that I was angry at police last year. But also the thing is, I think that everybody keeps talking about is that we maybe need more deference to the police. And I don't think that's what we need. We've got to a place last year where police were found in contempt by a federal judge several times, where they abandoned their precinct and didn't tell their chief, where they the city council tried to stop them and they couldn't. We don't need more deference to police. We actually need police accountability. And so that is part of the city attorney's job, is negotiating the next police contract. I think it's in the best interest of police to actually have accountability in their contract, because the way I felt last summer, I was not alone. There are a lot of people in the city right now that don't trust our police department because of what happened in 2020. And so what we need is a shift in police accountability. But as far as defending officers and civil rights lawsuits and things like that, the city is my client and I will represent the city. When it comes to misdemeanor prosecution, I'm going to go where the data leads. I want Seattle to be a safer and healthier city, which means I'm not going to keep repeating mistakes from the past, falling into this idea that it's politically convenient to be tough on crime, quote unquote, so that's what I'm going to do. No, I actually care about the problems and I care about what the actual solutions are. And so I'm going to be evidence-based and go by the data to spend our money wisely to get to a place of health and safety.
Nicole, I want to ask you about some comments that were made by former governors, including Chris Gregoire, who told Q13 that it would be disastrous if you became city attorney.
What I can't sit there and let go by is a person who believes in anarchy, that to property destruction is a moral imperative, that all police are serial killers, that the United States Supreme Court is illegitimate and who hates our country.
So that was, again, Governor Chris Gregoire, another Democratic governor, Gary Locke, have both endorsed your opponent. How do you respond to that?
So, I mean, I don't know. I thought that was first of all, I thought it was pretty wild that someone of her stature would call someone a terrorist over tweets, you know, and call me an anarchist and a terrorist. During 2020, Trump labeled Seattle an anarchist, quote unquote, anarchist jurisdiction. And a lot of us thought that was hysterically funny and just absolutely absurd, because what was happening in Seattle wasn't anarchy, quote unquote. That was something that the right had put on Seattle to try to keep Seattle from getting federal funding. You know, it was a dog whistle. And so I think it's interesting that a former governor would parrot the talking points of the right and endorse my opponent. But I actually am not that surprised, given that what's at stake in this election. And what is at stake is the things that are on the civil side of the office, which is the jumpstart tax and our tenant protections. And there are a lot of corporations that the former governor represents that are going to be taxed the most through the jumpstart tax. So it's not surprising that she would rather endorse my opponent, who has not said she would push back on that at all.
I just want to say thank you for joining us. And also the fact that I want to be crystal clear on something. I believe that we all can make mistakes on Twitter and in life and still bounce back from those things. And I think the most important thing is going forward that I like the way you be accountable for those actions. Doesn't mean that you can't do your job. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on our show.
And thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.